everyone, and welcome back to the Force Feedback Show podcast. It is 1 week earlier than expected. It is in episode number 4. We have got some more junior series stuff from Matthew, as expected, because he generally forgets everything. But we also do have special guest Dave from Supercars Talk. Welcome, Dave. It is great to have you here, mate.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot to discuss in the world of supercars and really, I guess, in a bit of NASCAR as well. We'll get to that a little bit later. But I guess for to start with you, Matt, what have you kind of forgotten from last time?
Two things, really. I forgot my cheeky little Kimi Antonelli report. Leading the standings, pole in France, one in France. And the other thing I forgot was an entirely new race series known as Indian F4. I think the only team announced so far is MP Motorsport. That's it for now. There's your weekly random F4 update.
Okay. Well, that's that out of the way. I guess we should probably get into the looming elephant in the room, really. And I'll kind of... Dave, you probably... I don't know how long you've been watching Supercars. You've probably definitely been watching longer than I have. But
I guess I have.
Yeah, I've only been going for a year, so yeah, definitely longer than I have. But I guess the looming elephant in the room, Shane Van Gisbergen, off to NASCAR in 2024. He pretty much confirmed it at the Sydney Supernight weekend. He's mentioned he's either open to doing part time or full time. But I guess we'll kind of touch on the supercars base first. Who's kind of the main suspect to replace Shane at this point?
My gut feel is that they'll go for Richie Stanaway, who's going to be Shane's co-driver in the endurance races. He didn't get a proper crack, I suppose, a couple of years ago when he came from F2. He kind of didn't have the budget or any contacts to move up from F2 to F1 and came back to our area of the world to have a supercars career, which didn't go as planned. After kind of being in two disappointing teams over 2 years, he got... And in a wild card and did quite well. And I think he's probably looking to reignite his career.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I've kind of been noticing with Richie. Is he's definitely interested in the seat. He did post on, he was talking to some media about it. He did say he was interested in it. Then I guess the thing is, you've got other supercars drivers, you know, who are interested in the seat as well. Because I kind of may have started a little bit of silly season, like I don't know how to describe it, but I ended up posting like it was a comparison between Andre Heimgartner and Brock Feeney on the supercars Instagram page. How many races they competed in, you know, finished in overall, and ended up posting, you know, comments saying, quote unquote, future teammates in 2024. Ended up getting Andre Heimgartner to like the comments. So I don't know, maybe he's interested in the 888 seat.
I think my gut feel with 888 is that they've... Now they've got Brock Feeney there, who he's really stepped up again this year. And I think next year he'll fully be ready to go and win a championship. So they can take a bit of a risk on that secondary driver. They don't need to go for like a Chas Mostert or Cam Waters. They can even... I've been saying my dark horse is for them to go for Nick Percat. Because he's out of contract, they can get him cheaply. He's worked with Andrew Edwards before, who's going to be the engineer on that car. And I think Nick, what we've seen Nick do in previous teams, is his ceiling is very high. It just whatever hasn't clicked at Walkinshaw. And then if Triple A go for like a Andre Heimgartner, he's got a contract, so you've got to then pay the guy out of the contract. He probably wants an increase in his wage because his stocks are high and things like that. So it becomes a very expensive exercise to go down that route. My gut feel is they'll go for the cheaper option because they've already got Brock Feeney there, who'll go and do all the winning if they need someone to do the winning.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Yeah, I agree. It kind of all depends on who they really want to pick, because they have openly said that Jamie Wincup's a fullback option if they can't get whoever the first option is, which I believe, as you said, is Stanaway. So that would be pretty cool to see Wincup back in a full-time car. I wouldn't put it against him to be competitive still. Like, he did mention when he was talking about it that it was, you look at Will Davison, you look at Mark Winterbottom, who are still performing well at their ages, you know. So it's still pretty good chances that he could, if he it does end up somehow with a low percentage coming back, you know, still be able to perform in that second Triple H seat.
Yeah, I do think Jamie probably stepped away a little bit too early. But then, on the other hand, it's better than hanging around for too long and not being competitive at the end of your career.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I guess that's just kind of the ballpark. We'll see what Triple H will play, if they want to bring in Stanaway or anything. I don't know, Matt, have you seen much of Richie racing in F2 at all?
Sorry, can I get a full name on that,
please? Richie Stanaway.
Yeah. It was quite a few years ago now, I think about 2017.
So basically when F2 just formed.
Yeah, I will look into it and I'll get back to that one later. That made about as much sense in English as someone speaking Spanish.
But I guess, yeah, so that's kind of the question we'll kind of leave the door open for Triple H to answer. And I guess on the NASCAR side of things, it's kind of the question is, where does Shane go and how long is it for? Because he's pretty much said, he's done with supercars. He's going to go part-time or full-time for NASCAR in 2024. And I guess looking at the driver market, the only place I see Shane going is in that full-time Call of Racing 31 car or continuing part-time in the Project 91 Trackhouse car. Those are the only two rides that I see that would be physically open that are Chevrolet teams as well, for Shane to go to, unless Trackhouse buys a third charter. So basically, Dave, you'll probably, I don't know if it's the same in supercars with the charter system, but NASCAR owns all these charters and everything, and yeah, basically the teams are going to buy them to like be eligible to qualify for every single race in the season. So yeah, Trackhouse would need to buy a third charter to get Shane into the, you know, in full time. Otherwise, he'd have to qualify in every single race. So I guess that's kind of the question really is, where does he land at? I don't know. Do you think he'd go outside of the Chevy camp?
I think he'd probably be open to those possibilities, because if he does leave Triple H, then he doesn't have that, tie to Chevy anymore. So he would be open to it. But I've said kind of all along, I thought he'd be on a very limited program next year, still doing supercars. That's my original thoughts. And now I'm thinking that next year, the way he said he wouldn't be full-time in Cup means that he's probably got more of a full-time Xfinity ride and then doing select Cup races to get experience.
Yeah, that would be the smart play, really, is to get into Xfinity Series and try that. Because it definitely wouldn't, like, if you're starting off a NASCAR from an international perspective, the better way to do it is via the Xfinity Series rather than the Truck Series, because pretty much ARCA and the Truck Series are at the same point at the moment. They're both full of monkeys. They're all wrecking each other, and you know, it's quite a very hard series to perform in. And when you've got people in there like Hayley Deegan, who aren't really performing, and then you look at when she did her first Xfinity Series start, she got a top 15 in her first start, and you know, you compare that to what she's been doing in the Truck Series, and it's like, you know, it's kind of hard, I guess, to compare the two, because it's not possible to perform well in the Truck Series and then go out and perform well in the Xfinity Series as well. And it's just happened with so many drivers, like Harrison Burton, who's in Cup at the moment, He won like 5 races in Xfinity Series, none in trucks, but isn't performing too well in Cup at the moment. But then you have also the drivers who are performing, who have performed well in the truck series. Kyle Busch, he's a Cup regular, but you know, like drivers like Zane Smith and Carson Hocevar at the moment, they're all performing well in the truck series and in other series as well. So I don't know. I feel like Shane would be better off, as you said, to go to the Xfinity Series full time. The question is who with again. I feel like, you know, he would be smart to go to Stuart Haas Racing and Ford in the number 10 if Eric Almirola retires in the NASCAR Cup Series number 10 car, because that means they've got a suitable driver. Stuart Haas Racing is not really as good as it once was. Like, they've got Kevin Harvick retiring at the end of this year anyway, and they're bringing in an Xfinity Series driver, Josh Berry. The 10 car is still to be decided, so that's if Almirola decides if he returns or not. And then they've got the 14 car of Chase Briscoe, who's won before, just hasn't, you know, got the most consistent pace of anyone. And then they've got Ryan Preece, who's still looking for that first win. So if they put Shane in there, I think it'd be good for them to kind of, you know, at least they'd have guaranteed pace in the road courses. That's one thing they've been struggling at over the past few years, and that would be really good for them to kind of have that, I guess, guaranteed pace that they've got in a driver to go out and win. So I guess that would be good from their point of view. But as you said, an Xfinity Series rider probably would be the better option.
Yeah. Yeah, then he can get the experience on the ovals, I suppose, without being on the big stage, and get a bit of confidence in there.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just looking at the schedule because I've got everything. My room's motorsport related here. So I've got my NASCAR Xfinity Series schedule. So basically, it gives you every single track that's on the Cup Series schedule, pretty much, that he would have experience for going into 2025. He would have experience with super speedways, intermediates, short tracks, road courses. Of course, he's already pretty much got that sorted. But yeah, like he would pretty much have that sorted, and it's a shorter race distance as well for him to get used to. So yeah, that probably would be his best option. I find it interesting that no one's really floating that prospect around. Everyone's like, oh, he's going Cup full-time, or he's going Cup part-time. But no one's really floated around the possibility of him doing a full Xfinity Series season before a full Cup season.
I think that one probably makes the most sense, because from what I understand, because Marcus Ambrose did this years ago as well, and he did trucks, Xfinity, and then went into Cup, whereas he was then doing some Cup races while he's still in trucks. I think at the time there was only one road course race. But I'm pretty sure even his first full-time year in Cup, they didn't let him do the super speedways.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Would that be right?
Because super speedways are very hard to get a handle of. You've got to be... Like, I feel like it's hard to explain, but it's kind of like, you know, especially with the bump drafting and everything, you do not want to be with want to be the rookie bump drafting, you know, a champion... Mm. out of the way and slamming them into the wall, you know? You've got to get it exactly right. And I guess that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, which he has, other than, I suppose, iRacing, he doesn't have experience doing that.
Yeah. So I guess that's kind of something interesting to look at. We'll see what Shane does for 2024, but I guess it's for me, it's a toss-up between Xfinity or Cup. He may do trucks, because he is doing his first truck series start on the weekend of Indianapolis at Indianapolis Raceway Park, which is the oval. So we'll see how he likes the truck series, you know, when he races it, see how what he thinks of the ovals. That is pretty much a short oval, so we'll see what he thinks of it. But it is a very competitive place, IRP, which will be good to see. So keep your eye out for Shane. He might take both stages to get up to speed, but definitely, definitely keep your eye out for him for the final stage, because he could come into his own at that stage.
Yeah, he's a very quick learner.
So I guess we've kind of covered where Shane goes and, you know, who replaces him, but we really haven't covered the main series he's leaving off, and that's Supercars. So I guess at the moment there is a few concerns with the future of the sport, with Ford having pulled their safety car support and their advertising support for the sport as well. What do you kind of make of that? What do you think the future's kind of lying, Dave?
That's an interesting one. I mean, it's something that kind of moves around anyway, you know, whether they find it valuable or not. I'm not too concerned about the actual, you know, the future of the category. There's been doomsdayers on this since, you know, the mid-90s when we first had Super Touring, and that was going to kill off the V8s because, you know, the Super Touring was the future. And we're still here, the V8s are still kicking and the strongest category in Australia. I think even if Ford moves away, unless they block them from using the Mustang, it'd end up a similar situation as we have with the Camaro now, where it's, you know, essentially Supercars owns the IP and the teams just go racing with the car. There's not really that direct involvement from Chev that there, you know, used to be. So I think it'll continue along that kind of lines until another manufacturer wants to jump in. But the teams don't get the manufacturer funding that they used to. So I think as long as you can get the IP, it wouldn't look good if it was just one manufacturer. So as long as you can get the IP to at least have two different car manufacturers in there, it should be fine to continue.
So what do you have any idea on what car manufacturers might actually be interested in jumping in? Because I haven't heard any, you know, anyone who's remotely interested in it, like via the media or anything. But my thought process is if they can't get any, you know, any car manufacturers in, why doesn't Roden Cars come in and, you know, make a new supercar model that they can use for the teams as well? Be a good marketing exercise for them, but also, you know, it'd be good for the supercars as a whole, really.
Yeah, I was hoping that they'd go, because it doesn't seem that there is manufacturer interest, I'm not sure what it's like everywhere in the world, but we've got a bit of a problem with the marketing for the manufacturers at the moment. They're all going kind of down the electric and the hybrid path and things like that, which car racing doesn't quite fit, especially a domestic series. You haven't got a lot of money to go and develop hybrid systems and things like that. So I'm a little bit surprised that no one else kind of stepped out and went and got permission to do a different car brand and did that with Gen 3 coming in, kind of like what Erebus did with the Mercedes back when Gen 2 came in. So I think that's probably the future of the category more, where you just get permission to kind of go and do it yourself, and then your unique selling point for a sponsorship is that you're the only one out there that's running, say, Toyota Supras or Nissan 350Zs or something like that, whatever the current model Nissan Z car or whatever it is at the moment.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. It's a very complicated.
It shows my age still calling it a 350.
Oh dear. No, it's a very complicated, I guess, system for supercars to kind of work through it. Because I guess again, as it all relies on what Ford's going to do, if they're going to leave or if they're going to stay, and I wouldn't blame them if they did leave, because it has been a tumultuous year for them, and I guess from your point of view, what are you thinking kind of in regards to the Motorsport Australia kind of decisions that they've been making that everyone's not really happy with, and you know, all those penalties.
Yeah, just on a side note of that as well, before we get on to the Motorsport Australia stuff, a lot of people are saying about the parity being, you know, wide out of the window and that. I think I haven't actually drilled down on the actual results, but you can see in the field that it is extremely close. And it's not like we're talking, you know, the Mustang is seconds off the pace. even if it is, you're only talking, it might be like a tenth, half a tenth of a second off the pace. But because the field is so close, that can seem to make a really big difference on them. It's not like when we've had in the past where, you know, certain manufacturers might be 2 seconds up the road in qualifying. It's extremely close, so you're only talking about trying to find, you know, like a tiny minimal difference could turn the whole thing around.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I guess the kind of thought process for me is like, when you look at the field, and thankfully so because on TV, they've got their own, you know, colour designated things, the gold for Chevrolet and the blue for Ford, with the numbers inside them. I guess it kind of, generally, most of the time you see, I don't know, it's more, the top 10 has usually got one or two Fords in it, and then the rest is Chevrolet, and then back down the other half of the field, it's pretty much all Chevrolets and the rest of the Fords. So it's kind of like a little bit of a mix throughout the field.
That's where it does look bad.
Yeah.
But if you actually look at the, and if you took like 888 and Erebus, who are doing an extremely good job this year, out of the equation, all of a sudden it doesn't look bad. As lopsided.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing as well, like 2/3 of the field is Chevs and 1/3 is Mustangs.
Yeah.
So you've also got that where there just physically isn't as many. So it does look like there's big chunks of red on the timing board. I think the way with the social media and stuff these days, it's very easy to blow some of this stuff out of proportion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I guess really, if I'm looking at the kind of my sheet for supercars here, I guess looking at it at the moment, so at this point, we've kind of had a few different winners this year. We've had Waters, Van Gisbergen, Kostecki, Feeney, Brown, Winterbottom, and LeBrock, as well as De Pasquale. So I guess that's kind of the question is, like, you know, Ford's won twice, the rest is all Chevrolets, but I guess it's definitely, the season's still more competitive than it was last year. Shane dominated with 21 wins in the year, and now we're looking at a season where we've actually got a title fight, you know? Like, was the kind of start of Gen 2 similar, or was it a little different?
Gen 2 was very similar in that you had different winners and had a lot of, probably at the time, I'm trying to recall whether they were first-time winners as well, but you did definitely have that mix while everyone was learning the cars, how to get them right. And that was the problem as we got to the end of Gen 2, that 888 had their secret sauce and had their suspension bits that no one else could have and things like that, which made it very lopsided. Whereas now with the new cars, you can't go and build new suspension every week and get that perfect. Everyone has the same suspension set up and that.
Yeah, I guess the suspension for 888 is kind of, it's all really a kind of looming question on I guess, what, why, how, where, kind of all the questions for Gen 2, really. But I guess we're kind of in Gen 3, so it's kind of moved past that. I did want to briefly talk about two things related to supercars, and I want to get onto the Brickyard. Firstly, I wanted to mention Andre Heimgartner. He's doing a fantastic job in what is probably a little bit of a lackluster team at the moment. You know, he's scoring consistent podiums. He's still looking for that win yet. But it's like, you know, he's done a really, really good job, and yet he's still stuck with Brad Jones Racing. You know, do you think it's kind of a good move for him?
I think I try and look on the bright side of it. It's not so much that he's stuck there, it's that he's found a happy home.
Yeah.
So, obviously, he had a bit of an interesting run into supercars at the start of his career. And I think there were some questions on his commitment to it and things like that. And then he got thrown a bit of a lifeline, funnily enough, with Brad Jones Racing. at the Enduros a few years ago now, when one of the other drivers couldn't compete because they were in a crash. And he started that and then ended up getting that ride with the Kellys, which then became the Groves, which he did quite reasonable there. But he really seems to have hit his stride now at Brad Jones Racing. And I think with Bryce Fullwood, who's stepped up this year as well, that they're starting to get a good little team there again.
Yeah, and I guess as kind of the second BJR team, it's kind of the questionable one at this stage, because Mac has kind of not really been there. He's been in a really in or out this year, and you've kind of got Jack Smith, who's been okay in qualifying. And sometimes in the race he's moved up quite a few places, but generally it's like he's towards the back of the field. So that's kind of why the second BJR team's really lackluster at the moment. And I kind of hope leading into Gen 3, Jack Smith would kind of have a little bit more motivation and a bit more push towards, you know, getting towards the midfield at least. But I don't know if that's really happened too much this season.
I think that's a hard one, because I'm not sure his motivation is there to... I think he realises within himself he's never going to go and win the championship. And he's quite happy to just continue as he is. Without, you know, why would I put in all of that effort to end up 10th where I can have my cruisy lifestyle and finish 15th?
Yeah.
I've never spoken to him or anything, but that's just the impression I get from him. Is that, and Dad's going to continue paying for this as long as I want to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess... yeah, we'll see what I guess Andre tends to do in the future. But as you said, it's definitely been, you know, he's definitely done really well in past as well, as you mentioned at Bathurst, co-drive as well. The second thing I did want to bring up is the kind of calendar for next year. Is kind of, what are you thinking Supercars is headed? Are you thinking Tony Quinn's going to bring us back to New Zealand, or are they going to take us to, they're going to remove some races off the calendar, like is Sandown going? You know, what are you kind of thinking on that regard?
Everything at the moment seems to be pointing that we will actually have an expanded calendar next year. The last couple of years with COVID, they definitely condensed it to the minimum that they could have. And I think there were some concerns this year with bringing in Gen 3 and having a lot of rounds. So they stuck to that kind of minimum amount. Whereas next year they are actually definitely talking about having 14, 15 rounds, which has only been 12 this year. It looks like there will be one in New Zealand, probably at Taupo. I think I said that right. And then going to Singapore as well, which that's a bit more questionable. And I think we'll have all the current rounds plus Winton as well.
So that's kind of a good thing that at least we've got some international travel back. I mean, I feel like the Singapore it's not going to be too awful, in my opinion. It is a tight track. It is difficult. But... I feel like just supercars in my mind on that track would be ideal for a support race.
I think the hard thing would be the Singapore race promoter paying for it.
True.
So it would be a cost, you know, it would be a cost equal thing for the supercars. As they've... You know, when they went to Circuit of the Americas or Bahrain and that, I think the teams actually made more money than if they went to, say, like a Winton or Queensland Raceway. So the teams were, in general, quite happy to go and do it. The bonus with Singapore is that it does fit more the Australian TV time.
Yes.
So, like, Circuit of Americas was ridiculous because I'm trying to remember, but I think we were in that, you know, trying to watch an IndyCar race or, you know, the Brazilian Grand Prix and that, where it is 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So you got a very early, you know, start to the day to watch the race. Whereas at least Singapore, especially if you're on before the Grand Prix, it does lead into that prime time for the Australian audience.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. We'll see. I guess I'm kind of more leaning towards, I don't know about Winton. Has there kind of been like a lot of rumours floating around about that?
I think Winton will probably happen. It's a very well attended round, even though it's not the most exciting circuit on paper. It does usually produce pretty good racing. And it being kind of the test track for most of the all the Melbourne teams, I think they're quite happy to include it.
And then kind of the last question on the calendar is really Sandown for me is like, you know, is it actually going to end up saying on the calendar, because there has been a lot of rumours that Melbourne state wants to tear it down and everything, and you know, that's kind of the question mark for me is are they going to keep it on the calendar, or is it going to stay as a track, or you know, what are they going to end up doing with it, you know?
I think Sandown will stay as long as it's there,
because that's kind of my big question.
The big issue was a bit like, say, Pukekohe.
Matthew, have you got anything on Richie Stanaway yet?
Yes, he got two wins in the 2015 GP2 series with a total of 6 points finishes, including those two wins. He didn't compete in the second round at Bahrain. Second to last round at Bahrain. Second time they went to Bahrain, and the one race is in Abu Dhabi. He also did how many other series of like Le Mans and endurance stuff? Give me 1 minute to get it up. Oh yeah, he did. In the same year, he did the GP2, 2015. World Endurance Championship, 24 Hours of Le Mans, so they sort of go hand in hand. He also did European Le Mans Series and the 24 Hours of Nürburgring.
Quite a busy man, I agree. Inside. Making sure you're still with us there, Dave. You're still alive?
Yeah. Am I back in now?
I think his internet might have cut out there. I guess...
Am I back in now?
We'll see if we can get Dave fixed. You can? All right, I may have just to leave and rejoin.
I can hear
Sorry, Dave, we'll be back in a minute.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It dropped out for a second there, and then I started talking. I'm like, no one can hear me.
Yes. Oh, dear. That's all good. Common internet problems. I guess back to Sandown. I guess what's kind of the motive there, do you know?
As I was saying, I think Sandown has been years and years because, like with Pukekohe, where there's the horse racing in the middle and then the track's built around it. So the Melbourne Racing Club owned that and another horse racing circuit where they would, you know, have certain days of the week, the horse racing bit at Sandown, and then it'd be at the other track. And then over the COVID period, because people couldn't travel to the races, they had all of the horse racing just at the other track, and Sandown didn't get used. And I think they've realised, hey, we can just have all the horse racing at the one track. Nobody cares because it's all online betting and everything these days. And we can actually sell the land that Sandown's on and make a pretty penny out of the land now. So that's unfortunately, COVID has probably killed the Sandown racetrack.
And it has been providing some really good racing over the past couple of years. So it is unfortunate.
Yeah, Sandown is genuinely a really good race. I'm a little bit biased towards it because it is my local track. It's only about 20 minutes down the road. But you've got the big horse racing grandstand, but it means that there's a tiny little bit around the turn three where the cars disappear for, you know, kind of a quarter of a second. But basically from the grandstand, you can see the whole track.
Wow.
So even if you go there to watch the 500, it is generally very easy to follow what's going on in the race because you can see everything a bit more like an American oval.
Yeah. Yeah, because it is quite, as you said, like an American oval. It's kind of like, it's not stretching out too far, you know, and it's not hidden by bushes or anything. But I guess that's definitely, one of the easiest things to watch.
Yeah, whereas if you go to, say, watch a race at Phillip Island, you more see that one corner that you're at, and that's it. So if you haven't got a big screen in front of you, you know, the cars disappear for a minute and a half, and you've got no idea what's happened in that time.
Well, but pretty much you could have all the cars disappear and end up a minute later having only one come back across the line, you know? That would confuse everyone.
Exactly. But then also, like, you've got no idea if someone's pulled into the pits and things like that. Like, all of a sudden, say, Van Gisbergen is 30 seconds behind, and you don't know whether he's gone off or whether he's had a pit stop, and it makes it very... Whereas if you're at Sandown, that is one of the joys of being there. You can see that, they've pulled into the pits, and you can do your mental following of the race. Hey, he's a bit behind, but he's already done his stop.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess it would be definitely be a loss to the calendar to have Sandown gone. But I guess kind of it's the same with Pukekohe, as you said.
Yeah.
If they're going to choose to sell the land, there's nothing we can really do about it. I do know that rumors have it that apparently Pukekohe is going to start back up racing again. There has been a lot of talk about it. Probably not to the supercars level, but there is rumours that there will be local racing held back in, say, November-ish.
The track's still going to be there, isn't it?
Yeah, so that they're not tearing down the track.
Yeah, it's just that they're extending some of the horse sheds or whatever so you don't have the runoff area.
Yeah. So I guess they might try and... I don't know what the plan is, but apparently they'll try and get it racing again by this year, next year ish which would be really, really good for the area, at least just to have local racing at least. But yeah, because it is same with Sandown. If they can keep just at least local racing, even if you do miss supercars, instead of tearing down the whole track, it'd be a nice touch for the local area.
I think if it starts being sold off, the whole lot will go with Sandown.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yep. I think it'd be totally lost.
I guess the kind of last thing I wanted to touch on is the Brickyard. Both Brody Kostecki and Shane Van Gisberg are going to be racing at the Brickyard in a week's time. You know, what are you kind of, what's your kind of thought process on that? Because I know Brody's raced ARCA before, so he's done probably, I think he's done some ovals. So that could, again, he could end up moving to NASCAR in a few years once he's seen how Shane's kind of been going and everything. Because he's done some ovals, he's got some oval experience with the ARCA series. And I guess, you know, he's making his first cup start this weekend, not this weekend, next weekend, with Richard Childress Racing, which is a pretty competitive team this year. So I guess kind of what do you think? Is Brody going to go to NASCAR, or is he...
I think, as you said, Brody did a lot of his early racing over in America, and I think that's always been a dream of his to do, the NASCAR Cup Series. I think that the harder thing for him was then getting budget to race or move up the ladder. It was easier for him to come back to Australia and then move up the ladder here and get to the top. And I think he's been working away trying to get a ride like this for quite a few years, actually. It's just been, I suppose, piggybacking off Shane's success in Chicago, that all of a sudden, hey, these guys can actually drive on road circuits. This guy's been looking for a drive for quite a while. Maybe we should give him a shot.
Yeah, and I guess I'm not... I know Denny Hamlin, one of the NASCAR Cup Series drivers, 50 career wins, 3 Daytona 500s. Everyone memeing him for not having a championship yet. But I guess that he's spoken about it on his podcast as well. You know, he doesn't expect Shane to be as dominant as he was in Chicago, because because in Chicago, it was a new circuit for everyone. Shane was used to street circuits, and that's kind of what allowed him to have that edge. Denny said he'll still be competitive. You know, he'll still be up the front competing for a win, but he just won't be as, you know, dominant as he was in Chicago. And I guess for Brody, I wouldn't put him in contention for the win straight away in his first Cup start, given it's Indy road course. You know, it's not a street circuit. It's not a new circuit for everyone. Everyone in the Cup Series field's got experience there. You can't count out people like AJ Allmendinger, who's, you know, former IndyCar driver. Count out like people, you know, who've got road course experience. You know, like Austin Cindric, Ross Chastain, etc. Chase Elliott, especially, who's one of the best on the road courses. So that's kind of you need to kind of consider that as well when you think about where Brody could be. I think Shane definitely would be inside the top five, but I wouldn't go past, you know, top 10 for Brody. I think that would probably be his limit. I wouldn't say he'd be contending for a win on his first Cup start.
No, I think it'd be a lot like when Marcus Ambrose went over, and they'll be very competitive there, but obviously Shane had a big advantage in that he's very used to racing at street circuits, whereas that was the first for all the NASCAR guys. And also, Shane did have that test day at, I think it was Daytona or something, where he got to run on the road course before
Charlotte,
Charlotte. I think they've changed the rules or whatever, but said Brody isn't allowed to test the car before the weekend.
Of course they have.
That then does take away, you know, Shane did actually then have an extra day actually in the car to get used to it, but Brody's going to be going in a bit more blind. But I think they're probably underestimating a little bit how good they're going to be. But yeah, I think top 10 for both of them is a pretty reasonable assumption.
Yeah, and I guess I find it interesting that Project 91 car with Kimi Raikkonen behind the wheel just hasn't had as much pace as it has with Shane. Guess we'll kind of find out where it generally should run this weekend. Not this weekend, next weekend. Still getting confused. Weekend of myself. But, you know, I'm kind of interested to see where Shane can actually put it. And just, is Kimi just really past his best by date, really?
Well, I'll just look at his results in Formula One for the last few years.
Yeah. That's true.
And it's I suppose, the transferable skill. Because Shane's driving something similar-ish day in, day out. Whereas, I suppose, Kimi went and did the rally for a couple of years and did some truck starts. But it's not like he's driving this type of racing day in, day out.
Yeah. And I guess you've got to kind of look at the field as well. As I said, you've got AJ Allmendinger, Ross Chastain, Chase Elliott, etc. in the Cup field. Austin Cindric, who've all got experience on road courses. But then you also have to look at the other drivers competing in that race. You've got Kamui Kobayashi as well.
Yeah.
And then you would have to say you've got Brody as well. I'm not sure who else has been entered into the race, but, you know, you look at all those drivers, plus, it is, it's the third to last race before the playoffs, so there's going to be a lot of carnage. There's going to be drivers who need to win to get in, and that's the kind of thing we need to be looking out for, is like, you know, it's all these drivers who are below the playoff cut line, they're going to be aggressive. They're going to be going for the win. And we saw it last year at the race. At turn ones, at restarts, was chaotic. You know, your driver spinning, going onto the grass everywhere. And that's kind of, I guess, Denny Hamlin again mentioned on his podcast, he's going to need to get used to bumping and being wrecked out quite often. Especially at Indy. Like, Indy is probably the most chaotic road course race of the year. Because of just that turn one and the restarts that they've got there. So, Yeah, we'll see what Shane can do, but I'm pretty positive it's going to be a top five for him and a top 10 for Brody. Two very talented drivers. Brody just, I guess, hasn't really had the potential or the luck in recent years, and has finally got that motivation this year to develop it and put it into perfection, really.
Yeah, well, they've had a bit of a reset with the Gen 3 coming in, so you haven't got that baked-in advantage or the disadvantage that some of the teams have had.
Yeah. I guess that's... Did you have anything else you wanted to bring up, Dave? Because I've run out of everything.
No, I think we've covered off just about everything. Oh, the only question is this... Is Brody replacing someone at... RCR, or
no.
Is this a wild card thing?
It is a wild card thing. House. So they've got the 3 and the 8. So the 3 is Austin Dillon, yep. The 8 is Kyle Busch. Those are their two full time cars, and they've got the 33, which has been run part time for the past 2 years. Last year they had it for Austin Hill, who's one of their Xfinity Series drivers, and this year they'll be fielding it for Brody. So it's just kind of like a wild card thing. He's going to have to qualify in on. Again, he's going to have to qualify into the field. But, you know, there's still that door open for him to be, you know, up front. So we'll see where he goes. But I guess...
Does that mean Shane has to qualify in?
Yeah, same with Brody. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I believe if they don't set a time, they can't make the race. I'm not 100% sure on that. But as long as they set a time, they're fine. But yeah, I'm pretty sure, because if Shane didn't set a time in Chicago, he wouldn't have been allowed to race. Same with Kimi and both Watkins Glen last year and Dakota race this year. Whether it's with charters, with drivers who are just doing part-time charters, like Jenson Button in the 15, that's a Rick Ware Racing charter, they own that. He doesn't have to worry about not qualifying in on speed, you know? Yeah, it's a complicated system, but... Yeah, it'll be something most fans will get used to eventually.
Yeah.
But that will round off this episode of the Force Feedback Show. I'd like to definitely thank Dave for coming along and talking all supercars and a little bit of NASCAR with us. It has been great to have you on, mate. And
it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, of course. And thanks to Matt for bringing him this like 5 minutes worth of Junior Series knowledge. Didn't really get much. Oh gosh, here we go. Right,
I can bring 6.
Oh, you signed this morning.
We have one more thing. The calendars for the next year. We got Formula 2 and Formula 3 calendars for this year. So Formula 2 is Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Melbourne, Imola, Monaco, Barcelona, Sebring. I wish Sebring, Spielberg, UK, Hungary, Spa, Monza, Baku, and new for this year, Qatar, and then
ending so Japan's going to be earlier in the year. Marina.
Yeah,
yeah. Baku's swapped places with Japan, so Japan's around 4 next year in F1.
Okay.
And I haven't even looked at the
Formula One calendar for next year.
Yeah, they can
put those. I will.
F3 is identical.
Switched it around a bit.
Oh, they have.
Yeah.
Both for the 7th. Oh, I didn't even know that. Oh, I'm a little bit silly.
Tried to make the travel a bit more logical.
Yeah, which is smart. They've done that well.
Yes, that's why they go. That's why they go to.
I think Canada's still the Austria outlier because they've got a contract.
That's why they go from Europe
to
Canada to Austria.
Holiday weekend or something.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's why that's still a very outlier. But yeah, so some of the trips over recent years have been a bit questionable when you're trying to say that you're trying to save the planet and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Saving the planet, then going halfway across the planet.
But no,
and
we actually ran it off this time. Thanks, Matt. But it has been great to discuss supercars and a little bit of junior series and kind of just speculate on what things are going to happen in the future. We are kind of wizards. We're going to predict the future. It has been good to discuss things with Dave and we'll hopefully have him back sometime soon in the future. But that is the end of the Force Feedback Show podcast for now. And we will see you in another 2 weeks, actually 2 weeks this time, where me and Matt will just be on our own discussing whatever it is that comes to light. Well, are we not?
No, we're not on our own next week.
Oh, that's right.
I literally messed
up. Alright, well,
we can
bring in Josh Revelle.
30 seconds, losing my mind. We've got Josh Revelle on the show.
Anyways, that is the end of the Force Feedback Show podcast, and we will see you all for the next one. Goodbye, everyone.